Jack, Anton, Rex, Wilson, and Felix, Quinn said. I nodded. How do you know their names? I didn't answer for the longest time because I wasn't sure how. Finally, I tapped my finger to my temple and answered. They live in my head, and no matter how hard I try to get them out, they never leave. That turned out to be the end of our anything-goes question game. I'd revealed more than I wanted to, and had given him more than he'd bargained for. I stood up abruptly. I've got to get back to Casey. Quinn, still staring at me wide-eyed and open-mouthed, finally got his wits about him and said, Yeah, okay. Heading for the door, I turned when Quinn called my name. Jake? What? He fidgeted with his guitar. I shouldn't have asked that. I stared at him a moment before replying, And I could have lied. Why hadn't I lied? It would have been so easy to tell him I couldn't remember, but instead I admitted to Quinn my deepest and darkest secret. Not only did I divulge they existed, but also that these wayward ghosts lived inside my head. Crazy much? I could only imagine what was going through Quinn's mind. No doubt the poor kid hadn't expected such honesty from me. He probably thought I was insane because that's how it sounded to my own ears. At least maybe now he understood why I was emotionally unavailable to him. There were just too many damn people competing for my time. Indiana must have taken a giant doo-doo in her pants, because when I came out of the music room, my father was baby-free and waiting for me. Hey, can I talk to you for a minute? My father asked. The wrinkles in his forehead and the serious tone of his voice instantly put me on edge. Were he and Mom getting a divorce? Had he gone bankrupt from a previously undetected gambling problem? Everything okay? My father nodded, but it was a solemn gesture. Oh no. What was wrong? Could it be a death in the family? Cancer? I think I owe you an apology, he finally said. An apology? I almost had a panic attack for an apology. What do you have to be sorry for? Your pre-wedding freakout. I can't help but think it was because of the honeybee story.
It had nothing to do with the damn honeybee, and it wasn't a freakout. I just wanted to talk to Casey.
I hope you know I was just joking around. Marriage is not like honeybee sex at all. At least not mine. I mean, sex with your mom is okay. I interrupted before my ears heard something that couldn't be reversed. If I thought I had nightmares now. Move on. Right. Anyway, all I'm saying is your mom and I have a great relationship. In fact, you and Casey remind me of us when we were younger. That passion and chemistry you have for each other. That was what it was like for us. And still is to a lesser extent. I mean, we're not as young and nubile as we once were, but we can still work up a sweat, if you know what I mean.
I nodded grimly. Yes, I got the meaning loud and clear. I motioned with my hands for him to speed up.
Anyway, we've been through so much together over the years, and at times, it would have been easier to just call it quits. But then I'd remember that 20-year-old girl I met at the beach, all legs and breasts. Oh man, Jake, your mom was, whoa, sexy as all hell.
Dad, I'm serious. I'm going to leave unless you can get to your point without further references to my mother's body parts. You do have a point, don't you?
Relax, I do. See, I joke around about your mom being a drill sergeant and all, but the truth is, I want her to take control. The less I have to think about at home, the better. If she's running the show, where am I? Relaxing. I'm not sure if you realize this, but we McAllister men come from a long and proud line of marital wimps. We do what we're told, and we're happier for it. When your mom is happy, I'm happy. Get it? Okay, so then why can't she be happy when you're happy? Oh, no, he said, appearing completely shocked by my ignorance. It doesn't work in reverse. I laughed. You're so full of shit. Am I? In 3 generations, not one McAllister man has divorced. You tell me who's crazy. I found my way to the kitchen, where Mom was pulling condiments out of the refrigerator. I'd been hoping to catch her alone so I could get the scoop on Grace's boyfriend. So what's with this Rory kid? I asked, plopping myself down into a counter stool. Like earlier on the front porch, my mother stiffened. Now I was more curious than ever. She walked around the counter and took a seat beside me.
You know, last year when I asked you to donate to an organization that helps foster kids who've aged out of the system? I wrote a lot of checks. Remembering specifics wasn't normally a requirement. Not really, but go on. Well, it was used to help purchase a 26-unit apartment complex that we then turned into a living facility for young adults who've bounced around the system for years until they hit the age of 18 and were forced out on the street. Most of these kids don't have any survival skills because they've never had anyone to teach them. Anyway, I volunteer there, and it's where I met Rory. I know he looks a little edgy, but he's really a wonderful kid. Remembering that look in his eyes, I said, "That may be true, but something bad has happened to him." Mom's forehead furrowed. She seemed genuinely surprised by my assessment. "Why would you say that?" "I can spot an abused kid a mile away."
"Really? I didn't know that. What are the signs?"
"It's nothing you can outwardly spot. It's just a feeling. It comes down to his body language and that look in his eye."
"Huh. That's interesting."
"So what happened to him?"
"I don't know. They don't tell me anything about the kids' histories. I'm just a volunteer and not privy to their files. I help them learn life skills, help them with their studies if they're going for their GED or are in community college."
"I didn't know you did that."
"Well, I just wanted to give back a little. I have some experience dealing with kids who have been through traumatic experiences, and most of these foster youth have had rough experiences, even if it's just being bounced around all their lives."
"How old is Rory?"
"Quinn's age. 18, almost 19. Rory and I actually became friends a while back. He's a drummer, quite talented, actually. That's what caught my eye about him in the first place. Somehow he reminded me of you."
"I'm still not understanding how Grace fits into this picture."
"She's been volunteering with me, too. At first, it was just to bolster her college application, but then she became very invested in the lives of these young adults and was making friends with them. One in particular stood out."
"He's the total opposite of what I'd picture for her. I mean, he looks like a punk rocker, and Grace is more a preppy frat boy type of girl."
"No, actually, she's not. Grace has changed quite a bit over the past year. She has a compassion for others that makes me so proud. Maybe they are an odd pairing looks-wise, but Rory's actually very similar to her in personality. I can see why she likes him."
"And it doesn't worry you, them being together?"
"I'll admit at first I tried to dissuade her, but then I realized how hypocritical I was being. Here I am volunteering to help improve these kids' lives, and I'm telling them they can do anything, be anything, but at the same time thinking they aren't good enough for my daughter? What kind of message am I sending to Grace if I don't allow her to see Rory when his only visible fault is the messed up childhood that he had no control over? And besides, compared to the other two boys that your sister dated, Rory is a dream come true."
I understood what she was saying, but something about Rory still troubled me. "All I'm saying is be cautious. You don't know what he's been through. He might be more screwed up than you think."
"Thankfully, Linda and Dave didn't think the same way about you."
I jerked my head up, gaping at my mother. Damn, that was brutal. But so undeniably true.
"Sorry, that was not nice," she said, hesitating between words. "I feel a little protective of him, I guess."
"And I was being a hypocrite. So we're even." The two of us sat there quietly for a few moments before she changed the subject.
"Did Dad find you?"
"He did."
"Everything good?"
"Mom, it wasn't his story that caused the freakout, if that's what you think. You know me well enough to know there's a whole array of issues that could have been bothering me."
"But you worked it out with Casey, right?"
she asked, sounding hopeful but resigned that I rarely, if ever, worked things out. "I mean, yeah, sort of. We're married." She nodded, examining the ketchup bottle. I knew she wanted to press for more information, but decided against it.
"Well, you and Casey look blissfully happy."
"We are." The tension drained from her face and a twinkle shone in her eye.
"I love seeing you like this."
As if she'd heard her name being called, Casey entered from the backyard and slid into my arms so effortlessly that she felt like an extension of me.
"Speak speak of the devil, Mom grinned.
Uh-oh, what were you two discussing about me?
I only have good things to say about you always.
Right back at you, Casey said, smiling warmly at my mother. She then turned to me.
How was the session with Quinn?
Well, other than the fact that I learned what a douche I've been for the past 12 years, we had a very productive session.
Did he tell you that? Mom asked.
No, I came to that conclusion all on my own. She laid her hand on my shoulder.
I'm glad you finally talked to him. Quinn looks up to you so much. All he really wants is your approval.
So then why didn't you tell me I was acting like a chump?
Would you have listened?
The lie would be yes, but we both knew the truth to be no. I shook my head, smiling. She laughed.
That's why.
A lingering side effect of the loss of power I felt with Ray was that I needed to be in control of every situation. I never wanted to feel the way I did with him, helpless and afraid, so I sealed myself off to all but a trusted few. Somehow Quinn found himself outside of the bubble. That was going to change from this day forward.
I don't know what you are talking about, Casey said, grabbing my jaw and kissing my lips. Jake, hard-headed. I find him to be very obedient.
Mom laughed hard at that, as well she should. God knows she'd come face to face with my disobedience more times than she could ever count. I'm telling you, my dad said, padding through the kitchen just in time to catch the tail end of our discussion. It's the McAllister man's curse. Wimps, I tell you. The whole lot of us.
Chapter 10. Married Life. Time flies when you're having fun, and for 4 blissful weeks, I was having fun. Of course, most of the time was spent on my back with my brand spanking new husband right where he was supposed to be, but then I blinked and it was over. 1 minute I was preparing for the wedding of my dreams, and the next I was standing in the airport terminal hugging Jake goodbye. Those 4 weeks we'd spent together post-wedding were the happiest of my life, and that was saying something because on a regular basis, I was pretty damn happy. But then he left, and all I had to keep me warm and comforted were the incredible memories. Well, that and bowls of ice cream, a furry creature, and a blue knitted mermaid blanket. In the month and a half that Jake had been gone, I hadn't accomplished a whole hell of a lot on the personal front. Unless you counted the multiple television series I binge-watched on Netflix. My productivity at work was another story altogether. I was killing it there, even bringing my work home with me because, in all honesty, I didn't have anything better to do. Sure, I hung out with friends, and Kenzie had become a staple in my life since Kyle had also taken off on tour with Jake. But girlfriends were no substitute for my hot hunk of a husband. Every day, I thought of running away and joining the circus. Jake's circus, that is. But then sensible Casey would pipe up and chastise me for wanting to throw away the opportunity of a lifetime. The opportunity I'm referring to was an entry-level position at a respected public accounting firm in downtown Los Angeles, offered to me soon after my engagement. It couldn't have come at a better time, as Jake was still recovering from his medical crisis, so work and travel for him had been limited. He spent the break from touring working on a new album, while I was learning the ropes in a new job. For months, the two of us enjoyed evenings out after work and lazy weekends just being together. That's how I wanted my workdays to start and end every day of my life, with me in his arms. But it was never meant to last. By March, Jake had started a world tour, and I stayed home playing the nerdy numbers detective by day and the bored housewife at night. Even though we were apart for the months leading up to the wedding, it hadn't seemed as bad as now. Maybe it was because I had something to look forward to, and the planning took up all my spare time. But now that the wedding and honeymoon were over, the days apart seemed long and labored, and I was finding it more and more difficult to justify staying in Los Angeles while he was off touring the world. So I ate more ice cream, watched more television, and went to bed at old people hours. It was in this vulnerable state of mind that I met Lieutenant Dan. I hadn't been looking for a man to fill Jake's shoes, but sometimes fate just forced your hand. In my defense, I had been left unsupervised. You certainly couldn't leave me alone for extended periods of time without risking me doing something stupid. Like, say, bringing home a stray tomcat and naming him after my favorite character in Forrest Gump. I literally stumbled upon Lieutenant Dan while out on a jog. Running wasn't my thing, but neither was the little ice cream pouch settling on my lower belly. I needed something more to offset the enormous amount of calories I was scooping into my mouth on a nightly basis, so I supplemented my exercise routine with a light evening jog. And that's where I found him, dark and mysterious, a man of few words. He was the answer to my lonely prayers. And before I knew it, that surly tomcat had meowed his way into my heart. We could have been something beautiful. Too bad Lieutenant Dan turned out to be a grade-A feline asshole. Believe me when I say I wasn't looking for trouble when Lieutenant Dan wandered into my life. I'm sure when he first laid eyes on me, he was probably thinking I was an easy score, a little extra kibble on the side. He wasn't looking for a long-term commitment, but too bad for him, I wasn't a one-night stand type of girl, and the moment I caught sight of that scrawny, green-eyed boy, I was on a mission to save his furry little soul. Plucking up my new man, I took him to my nice warm house and fed him a wonderful three-course meal. You would have thought I was an award-winning chef, the way Lieutenant Dan went on and on about the cuisine. If only Jake were that appreciative. Once I'd filled his tummy full, it seemed silly not to invite him to stay for a nightcap, so we settled in for the evening. Watching a little TV, eating a little ice cream, and, because no one was around to judge me, retreating to the bedroom where we snuggled all night. So content was he with his new digs that Lieutenant Dan hung around all weekend. I could just feel the connection. It was so real, and dare I say, I was falling in love. But come Monday morning, the kitty Casanova couldn't get away from me fast enough, bolting between my legs and out the door the first chance he got. I'd met these love-'em-and-leave-'em types before, so I really wasn't that surprised when he abandoned me, nor was I expecting to ever see him again. But as it turned out, Lieutenant Dan's belly had fond memories of our time together, and he was back a few days later, ready for a fill-up. I know, I know. I was totally getting played. But I was lonely enough to welcome him back each and every time. And there were a lot of times. So went our one-sided relationship. Lieutenant Dan would disappear for days on end, no doubt sowing his feline oats to a steady stream of furry floozies, only to find his way back to me when he needed a good solid meal and a little heartfelt cuddling. And I, like the needy mistress I was, would wait patiently for his triumphant return. After a few weeks of this questionable behavior, I'd decided I no longer wanted to share him with other pussycats. So I made a commitment to adopt him and reform his wandering ways. First up, supplies. I bought them all, silently praying Jake wouldn't come home for a surprise visit to find a four-story cat mansion in his living room. I needed to ease him into this ménage à trois. Second up was the vet. For being a stray, Lieutenant Dan was surprisingly healthy. He was given a thorough exam, followed by shots and a microchip embedded in his neck. During the visit, the vet strongly encouraged me to neuter him. I hated to do it, but with his Lothario ways, Lieutenant Dan really had forced my hand. And so, that's how my poor tomcat left the pet hospital without his testicles. Racked with guilt over my part in his decimated love life, I showered my guy with gifts, and I think he might just have forgiven me when I slipped the black studded collar around his neck. If he couldn't be a stud in real life, at least he could be wrapped in them. But like the little traitor that he was, Lieutenant Dan hid behind the couch, and when I opened the door one day, he bolted. Maybe we just weren't meant to be. I comforted myself by reasoning that you could take a stray off the street, but you couldn't take the street out of the stray. Bad boys could never be reformed. So the next time he turned up on my doorstep, I had half a mind to send him packing myself until I caught sight of a note tied to his collar. From his actual owners. Apparently, my kitty gigolo was actually named Skittles, and he was no promiscuous alley cat. Instead, he lived in the lap of luxury in a two-story home down the street. And, as you might imagine, the people who lived there were understandably baffled as to what had happened to their cat's balls. So that was the end of our unhealthy relationship. Skittles went home to his family, and I went back to my ice cream. It never would have lasted anyway, because I needed a feline who put me first. And clearly, that was not Lieutenant Dan. Jake returned the last week of October for a scheduled break before the North American leg of his tour kicked off. We fell right back into our comfortable love affair, and having him in my arms again sealed the deal for me. The decision was made. I was quitting my job. Life was too short not to live it to the fullest, and for me, a full life meant being by Jake's side. I found a freelance job and planned to work on the side while touring in order to keep up my skills, but that would be the extent of it. Jake, of course, was ecstatic, and immediately made plans to move my things onto the bus so they'd be waiting for me when I arrived. As I'd already given my boss 2 weeks' notice, the only thing left to do was tell my coworkers. Dragging my feet something fierce, I decided to divulge that information after the Halloween office party. That way my friends could still meet Jake before I was gone. I owed them that much, considering my marriage had been the running joke in the office for an entire year. You see, according to my coworkers, I was but a delusional fan conjuring up a fake relationship with a famous rock star because, well, I was batshit crazy. After every office party Jake missed, 4 in all since I'd begun there, the conviction had only grown stronger. Finally, I had the chance to prove my sanity, but only if he made a showing. I checked my watch again. He was 40 minutes late and counting. I could almost hear the cackling come Monday morning. For the love of God, where was he? Jake's absence might not have been so noticeable had I not made the ill-conceived decision for us to dress up in a couple's costume. Jake hadn't been too keen on the idea, but as always had caved under pressure. Yet now, in hindsight, it might have been too ambitious for our first Halloween outing as a married couple. Perhaps I should have eased Jake into the whole new world of playing dress-up by allowing him something simple and non-committal to start out with, like a ghost or a whoopee cushion. Either that or I could have stressed the importance of commitment when it came to a couple's costume. There was just no wiggle room. If you were dressing as a duo, both sides needed to show up. I mean, when was the last time you saw a Fred without his Wilma or a slice of bacon without his eggs? I'll tell you when. Never. Because these things didn't exist as separate entities, and when one half of such an iconic pairing wanders into a party without the other, well, that'll just result in prolonged moments of awkward silence. Currently, I was living in one of those moments, dressed as one side of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'd chosen this costume for 2 reasons. The first was because of its convenience. It slipped right over the head, thus making it much less likely Jake would balk at the idea of wearing it, and in turn, keep my dream of complete couple cohesion alive and kicking. And the second reason was because, well, it was just frickin' hilarious. Or at least it would have been had the peanut butter shown up on time. Sadly, he had not. So now here I was, just a sad slice of toast smeared with a healthy dollop of deep red jelly. It wouldn't be so bad, I suppose, if my coworkers weren't mistaking me for a soiled sanitary napkin. Catching sight of more snickering in the corner, I called Jake again. Where are you now?
2 minutes away from the place I was when you called me last. I'm doing the best I can, Casey. The 10 freeway was shut down, and I've been taking side streets ever since. It's not like I'm enjoying this urban jigsaw puzzle.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's just, if you don't show up soon, I'm going to need to change my pad.
What?
Never mind, inside joke. Just get here when you can. I hung up and checked the time. I should probably wait 5 minutes before calling him next time. It sounded like he was getting testy. And the last thing I needed was a grumpy guy in a peanut butter costume getting mouthy during my time of the month. Plus, it went without saying, I wanted Jake to make a good impression. Not that it would be too challenging to impress my coworkers. He was famous, so short of acting like a giant douchebag, he'd rock their world. Still, it was important to me that Jake be on top of his game, if only just so I could properly show him off. Without looking up from the phone screen, I could hear my 2 giddy co-workers making their way over. I didn't have to see their faces to know who was coming. I smiled before they even opened their mouths. Nat and Sandra, my best buds, both worked in the back office with me. Nat was in her 40s and was never without a smile on her face. Her hair was streaks of blonde down to her shoulders, impeccably curled in big, bouncy twirls. She wore blue-rimmed glasses and colorful tops every day to work. Just seeing her in the mornings made me want to breathe in her fresh air. I was attracted to her like a flower to the sun. Not surprisingly, we hit it off instantly, and by my first afternoon in the office, we'd already planned our weekend outing together, even going so far as to pick the chick flick we'd be enjoying. Sandra had taken longer to win over. 28 floors, to be exact. Actually, it was more like 15, but who was counting? Yes, I was one of those people, the type who made friends in elevators. We'd started out chatting about the weather, which, let's be honest, people, it's Los Angeles. 95% of the time, the sun was shining. Not much to report there. Then we moved on to the restaurants in the area, both professing our love of Mexican food. By the time we'd reached the 28th floor, we were just finishing up an enthralling conversation about intelligent life on other planets. Sandra flicked her fingers in front of my face to jolt my mind back into the present. When we vote on costumes, my money's on you. Sure, it's a little nauseating, but you get extra points for originality. Again, I'm jelly. Blackberry jelly. Right. You know, hon, if you took birth control pills, there'd be no need for such bulky protection, Nat said, joining in the heckling. Sandra dropped her voice as she carried a devilish grin on her face. I have a tampon in my purse, if you prefer something more discreet. Unable to keep the amusement off my shamed face, I threw what I knew they wanted most, my husband, into their faces. Sure, keep cackling, ladies, but when my creamy peanut butter shows up, we'll just see who's laughing. If he shows up, my money's still on you photoshopping yourself into those wedding photos, Nat said. Or, Sandra added, speaking directly to Nat, at the very least she should be providing proof in the form of a pair of his signed underwear, but no, that's too much for the little princess here to share with us less fortunate souls. You want proof? Look who's walking through the door right as we speak. Both my co-workers spun around, tongues already dangling from their mouths like overheated dogs, but instead of feasting on my rocker hubby, they got an eyeful of Daryl, our version of Dwight from The Office. He was currently dressed like, well, himself, because there was no time for fun in his dismal world. The only reason he showed up at all was for the free food. Yuck, Casey, Sandra groaned. I can't unsee that. Jake's not coming, is he? If you stick around long enough, maybe. He's stuck in traffic. Of course he is, Nat grinned. My phone rang, and I held my hand up to my friends. Please be him.
Can you come to the lobby?
Jake asked, the frustration in his voice unmistakable.
They won't let me up.
They won't let you up? Why?
I don't know, Casey. They just said you had to come down here.
Weird. Okay, I'm coming. I hurried to the elevator, wondering who would prevent him from coming up. It wasn't like we had tight security or anything. Hearing a swishing sound, I looked up to find a dinosaur bounding down the hallway. It was one of those blow-up kinds that swayed and bounced as it moved. So randomly ridiculous, I couldn't help but laugh. The dinosaur stopped directly beside me, apparently never having received the company memo on sexual harassment and personal space. Neither one of us spoke as I focused on the lit-up button on the elevator. I could feel him staring at me. Great. I had to get in the elevator with this thing.
How's it going, sweet stuff?
T-Rex finally spoke, and damned if he didn't have just the right amount of prehistoric swagger. I'm good. Nice costume. He nodded, and his whole body moved with him. I shook my head, but there was no hiding my amusement. Dino took that as his cue to up his game by taking another sidestep toward me and trying to touch me with those stubby arms of his. Okay, let me stop you there, bud, I said, moving away. I'm a single-species kind of girl. T-Rex laughed, and I jerked my head up, recognizing it instantly. Jake? Dino swamped me like he was in the middle of a mosh pit, those ridiculous stumps for arms everywhere as I squealed and dipped away. Loud kissing sounds accompanied the bobbing head against my neck, and I was nearly screaming in laughter when several of my co-workers flooded into the hallway. One guy looked ready to attack, so I pushed Jake off, still giggling, and said, "It's okay. We're married." There were all sorts of different reactions coming from my would-be saviors. First and foremost, relief. These were accountants, after all. The last thing any of them wanted was a chance to prove their manhood. Relief, however, was quickly replaced with surprise when those in the hallway realized just who was under the dinosaur costume. "Sorry about the noise. He just surprised me. We'll be in soon." As the crowd dispersed, I pulled Jake around the corner.
"Let me at them,"
he joked, swinging his arms around helplessly. "I can't believe you," I said, zipping him out of the costume. "You weren't stuck in traffic at all, were you?"
"This is L.A. Of course I was stuck in traffic, just not for as long as I led you to believe,"
Jake said, then stopped to look at my costume.
"What are you, anyway?"
"I'm the jelly to your peanut butter, remember?"
"Oh, Jesus, you look like a homicide victim who totally bled out."
"I like that better than the other suggestions making the rounds." I pulled his peanut butter costume out of my bag and slipped it over his head. Still half in his dinosaur suit, Jake was a hilarious sight. He swiveled his hips in a striptease move until the rest of the T-Rex fell to the ground. "You know, if you wanted to go as a dinosaur, Jake, you could have just asked."
"Since when do I have to ask my wife's permission to dress in prehistoric garb? I don't remember that being in our vows."
That face, his smirk. I grabbed him and planted a kiss on those delectable lips. "It was in the fine print," I said. "You might have missed it."
"Uh-huh,"
he said into the hollows of my open mouth as he kicked the kiss up a notch. Catching sight of the unmistakable fire in his eyes, I wrapped my arm around the back of his neck at the exact moment his tongue dipped between my lips. This was the way he'd been since arriving home a few days ago. Randy is all hell. And despite what my costume suggested about my time of the month, I was clearly in heat. It took nothing but a sexy tilt of his head to turn me on, or in this case, a slice of bread slathered in peanut butter. There was just something about the way he wanted me, with such intensity and steam, that turned me into a quivering mess at the flip of a switch. I tightened my grip on him as our mouths worked in unison. If I hadn't already quit, this unprofessional bit of hallway PDA would certainly get me fired. Regaining my wits, I placed my hand on his chest and stepped back. "Behave," I reprimanded him, but in all honesty, I needed a scolding too. The fact that we couldn't keep our hands off each other was proof enough that I'd made the right decision to join him on tour. "Let's go. And Jake, it goes without saying that you'll be on top of your game tonight. Remember, we're going for wow." And that's just what he did. When it came to wowing, Jake was a natural. He didn't have to do much more than open those luscious eyes of his to get the approval of the females, and a little chat about classic 80s pop bands did the trick for the males. He'd even stolen a math joke off the internet for the occasion. "Dear math, I'm not a therapist. Solve your own problems." Which really slayed the crowd. We were a room full of accountants, after all. By the time the party had wound down, Jake and I were arguably the most popular peanut butter and jelly sandwich this side of the San Andreas Fault. We were also the gauge by which the party ended. I'd noticed the phenomenon before at parties. No one ever left before Jake. It must have been a fame thing, like people were afraid of missing something cool. So as we moved toward the exit, so did everyone else. Waiting for the elevator with Sandra and Nat and her husband, I embraced my friends and shared with them my news. It hadn't come as a huge shock to them, since we'd talked about the possibility many times, but there were still sad faces to contend with. "It's all right, Casey. I get it. I'd do the same thing," Nat said, encouragingly. That was followed by Sandra's stamp of approval.
"Hell, I don't know what took you so long."
Then Daryl, the office asshole, pushed past me and smugly tossed in his 2 cents.
"You'll never work in this town again."
Chapter 11. Heavy Heart. I stood on the sidelines, content to just be in the midst of the controlled chaos. A steady stream of people bustled around, each with a specific job to do. Occasionally, a greeting or two was thrown my way, but typically I wasn't paid more attention than any other person on Jake's team. They'd long ago accepted me as one of them, and that's what I loved about this blended family. It had been a couple of months since I'd quit my job and joined Jake on the road, and truly it had been the right decision for me. Although the plan had been to work part-time, doing freelance work for small companies, the jobs just kept coming in, and I found myself working nearly as many hours as I had been before. But at least now I wasn't stealing and castrating small animals to satisfy my loneliness. Being on the road with Jake and his crew felt like home, and it was just where I wanted to be. Conrad, one of the equipment guys, passed by me, formed a pistol with his hand, and crudely pointed it at me.
"Two more days and you're toast," he said, smirking.
Oh, hell no. If he wanted to trash talk, I was prepared to fling it right back in his face.
"That's it, Cupcake. You're going down." "Oh, big talker. I've seen you play video games, Casey. I'm not worried."
"Right, but you forget I have your boss to hide behind." Conrad shook his head, good-naturedly dismissing me as he went on with the task at hand. I might not have had an official job on the team, but I still served a purpose. On Jake's Outlast world tour, I was the self-ordained fun-time leader. And as such, I made it a point to find fun and exciting things along the way to engage the band and crew. Next up, laser tag. Turning my attention back toward the stage, I was surprised to see Jake strolling in my direction. Dang, he was a hunk. He was covered in a slick sheen, and I watched him swipe a towel off one of the speakers and mop his face with it. I nodded my approval, mesmerized, as always, by his glow. Catching me ogling him, Jake smiled his most seductive smile before beckoning me forward. Yeah, he was sexy, I'd give him that, but it wasn't enough to persuade me to step foot out on that stage with him in front of thousands of his fans. I shook my head. Jake nodded his. Oh, Lord, he was coming my way. Hello, dude. You have a concert going on with paying customers, I wanted to say. But Jake didn't seem the least bit concerned that while he was seducing me, an unattended and unruly mob might break free from the barriers at any moment and storm the stage. No, his translucent eyes were fixed on one thing only. Me. He sauntered over to me, playing up the sexy singer fantasy. It was an act that had starred in every woman's dirty dreams since Elvis first stormed the stage all those years ago. And when he arrived at me in all his glory and planted a wet, slippery kiss on my lips, I knew I would follow him anywhere. And Jake was taking me for a ride. His hands cradling my face and lips still locked on mine, he walked the two of us backward onto the stage and in clear view of the roaring crowd. I should have been mortified by this very public display of affection, but that would have required full control over my highly aroused body and soul, and such control was not possible while Jake was tempting me with his wildly sexy self. In fact, I'd nearly forgotten we had an audience until every red-blooded woman in the crowd screamed her approval as I wrapped my legs around Jake's waist in response to him lifting me off the ground. I dipped my head forward onto his shoulder as his lips caressed the prickled skin of my neck. We needed to stop this before being slapped with a misdemeanor charge for lewd conduct in public. As it was, our impromptu makeout session was probably already trending on Twitter. Jake seemed to come to his senses at the exact time I did, and he carried me back to the side of the stage, keeping his mouth on me the entire way. How he kept from tripping on all the ground wiring was a testament to his exceptional skills of seduction. Arriving back into the shadows, Jake set me down on my shaking legs. We stared feverishly at one another, soaking in the raw chemistry we produced by just being in the vicinity of each other. Neither of us had any excuse for our sizzling sideshow, other than that we were newlyweds and couldn't keep our hands off each other. I had no doubt if Jake weren't in the middle of working, he would have carried me off like a caveman and ravished me in some rocky grotto. Or in this case, his high-end luxury bus. Same principle. "You're crazy," I laughed, immensely enjoying the absurdity of him interrupting his entire set just to make out with me. It was moments like this that I applauded my decision to join my very sexy husband on tour. Go! Thankfully, Jake was a seasoned professional and managed to jump right back into his set with ease. I was still a bit of an amateur myself, so it took a little hand fanning to cool my jets. Of course, I was counting on getting some action later tonight, so I didn't want the flames to go out entirely. A few songs later, Malik, one of Jake's crew, nudged me. His lips moved, but I couldn't make out what he was saying. Holding up my finger, I removed the special earplugs that canceled out some of the harshest sounds on stage.
"You need to call your brother," he said.
"My brother?" I repeated, not understanding how he would know this.
"He's been trying to get in touch with you."
I instantly pulled out my phone and saw numerous missed calls and messages from Luke. Fear cycled through me. It was not normal for him to call me in the first place. But this many messages? Something wasn't right. Hurrying away from the side stage to Jake's dressing room, I dialed Luke's number with shaking hands.
"Casey,"
he said, his voice cracking with emotion. My bones chilled, and instantly I feared the worst. "Yes, it's me. Is Mom okay? Dad?" Luke broke down, and that in turn upped my terror. "Luke!" I screamed into the receiver. "What happened?"
"It's Miles and Darcy. There was an accident."
Luke broke off his sentence and unintelligible sobs came from the other line. "Luke, what happened?" I repeated.
"They didn't make it."
"What do you mean they didn't make it?" My voice was shrill with anger. How dare he play such a horrible trick on me?
"Their car was hit head-on. Darcy died on impact and Miles, he made it to the hospital, but Casey, he just passed away."
A chill barreled through my body, blanketing my insides with ice. My teeth began to chatter as I tried to make sense of the words Luke was speaking. There had to be some mistake. Why was it so cold?
"Casey, are you still there? I'm so sorry. I didn't want to be the one to tell you, but neither Mom nor Dad could do it."
Luke broke down again, and while I listened to his heavy sorrow, the reality began to seep in. My fingers had frozen over, and the grip they had on my phone was crushing. Gone? No. It couldn't be. And then the most horrible realization hit me. "Sydney and Riley?" I screamed out, now shaking so violently that nausea was taking hold.
"They're safe. It was Miles and Darcy's anniversary. They went out to dinner. The kids were safe with Mom and Dad when it happened."
Too many emotions. Too cold. The ice had numbed my brain, and very soon the hypothermia would set in, and I'd be a frozen corpse. Only then would I be exempt from facing the pain that reality had just forced upon me. Not Miles. Not the big brother I'd adored my whole life. Not Darcy, as much a sister to me as I'd ever known. And their kids. What was going to happen to their kids? "Do they know?" I asked, beginning to understand the implications of what was now happening to my family.
"Sydney does. She was still awake when Mom and Dad found out."
"Is she? I don't know. Is she okay?"
"She hasn't said a word. She's just numb, like the rest of us. They're going to let Riley sleep and tell him tomorrow. None of this feels real. Miles can't be gone. He just can't."
"Where are Mom and Dad? Can I talk to Mom?"
"I don't think she can talk, Casey. You just need to come home. Right now. We need you."
After hanging up with Luke, I scanned the barren room, unsure how to feel or even what to do. Jake was in the middle of a performance. I didn't have the time to wait for him to finish. If he knew, he'd cancel the rest of the show, but that would still take too long. I needed to get to the airport. I needed to book a flight. I needed help. Sean, Jake's manager, he would handle it. He could handle anything. I shot off a text, and minutes later he was in the room, scooping me off the floor. I hadn't even realized I was down there.
"I'm so sorry, Casey. I don't know what to say. I texted my assistant, and she's securing you and Jake a private jet."
"I can't wait for him."
"You won't need to.
I'm going to call off the rest of the show.
He's only halfway through it. I don't want to disappoint his fans. You can't tell him until it's over.
That's not going to work. Jake will want to be by your side. He needs to know.
No, I blurted out forcefully. I had no time to argue my point. I only wanted to be obeyed.
I'm telling you to let him finish. Please get me a driver so I can stop at the hotel to grab my bag. Then I want to go straight to the airport. My family needs me now.
Sean grabbed me by the shoulders and forced me to meet his eye.
Listen to me, Casey. Your family will want Jake there supporting you. Either let me call off the show or wait the 45 minutes for it to be over, but please don't leave without him. He's your family, too.
His words hit where they were intended, and I gulped back the giant sob sitting in the crook of my throat. Sean kept his eyes trained on me, and it was clear he had no motivation other than concern for Jake and me.
What do you want me to do?
He asked, looking strangely helpless for a guy who could do anything. The first tears began to fall. This was real. My brother was dead. I couldn't do this alone. Cancel the show. I need my husband. I was packing my bag at the hotel with the help of Sean's assistant when Jake burst through the door. Even from across the room, I could see the worry lines crossing his forehead. His eyes swamped with sadness, Jake hurried to my side and swallowed me up into his safe, loving arms. He represented safety, and I welcomed his strong presence. Neither one of us spoke. There was no need. We both understood the crippling loss and the unimaginable challenge ahead. The sob I'd been suppressing bobbed up and down in my throat like a boy waiting for a wave of emotion to knock it over. But right now was not the time to let it go. I needed to be strong. There was a little girl and a little boy who were worse off than I was right now. There was a father and a mother who were feeling the grief of losing their oldest child, and they needed my level head.
I don't know what to say, Jake whispered.
Why did this happen? Two kids are left without their parents. The first prickling of rage began to rise up inside. I'm just sick. Why? It's not fair. None of this is fair.
No, it's not.
Jake didn't try to reason with me, as he knew better than most how unfair life could be, and nothing he could say or do would make any of this right. My mom, Jake. What am I going to say to her?
I don't know, Casey. Maybe there's just nothing to say.
No, there really were no words. Life had just changed forever, and I had no experience dealing with such grief. Even when Jake had fallen into a coma, I hadn't succumbed to sorrow because I'd still had hope. This was different. All hope was lost. Miles and Darcy were gone, and no bedside vigil would bring them back. I was stepping into a whole new world. Burying my head into Jake's chest, I cried. We arrived in Arizona just past midnight and sat in somber silence on the drive to my parents' home. It seemed no words could accurately express the mood, so none were spoken. Jake's hand was firmly in mine, a reminder that I wasn't alone, even though the emptiness I felt inside could fill a stadium. It seemed I'd cried all the tears I had to cry, and my bloodshot eyes stung from the strain. Jake had been texting Luke during the trip, and was tasked with passing on the grim information to me. There was apparently no point left in going to the hospital, as my parents had already identified both Miles and Darcy's bodies. Their bodies. That's all that was left. I gulped back the shock of those words and of my parents having to say goodbye in such a manner. I wished they had waited for Luke or me, so we could have shouldered some of the pain for them, but at the same time, I was relieved not to have had to do that myself. If all I had left of my brother and his wife were memories, I wanted them to be good ones. But what of my parents? They'd brought Miles into this world and had been the last to see him go. I couldn't even begin to imagine what that was like. I didn't want to. I hadn't even known the tears had started up again until Jake pulled me tighter to him. Laying my weary head against his shoulder, I grabbed the arm he'd laid over my shoulder and drew it toward my chest, hanging on to him for dear life. His lips brushed past my forehead as his body settled against mine. It would be the last moment of peace for a very long time.
People were milling about as we walked through the front doors of my childhood home. It was a solemn affair that greeted us. Heads were hung in despair as we moved between grievers, adding our own sorrow into the mix. Miles and Darcy's kids had both fallen asleep in exhaustion, propped up on either side of my father. I'd been told that Riley had awoken to the sounds of sobbing and had to be told of his parents' death. Any later attempts to move the exhausted children into beds had failed miserably, so they were allowed to remain where they felt most comfortable. Leaving Jake with my father and brother, I found my mother in the living room. She was sitting in the center of our sectional couch, staring at the wall adorned with family pictures, her own mother nestled by her side. As I came around the room and took the other spot beside her, my mother didn't acknowledge my presence. In fact, I wondered if she knew I was there at all. She seemed to be in a sort of trance as her eyes moved back and forth over the pictures. Meeting my grandma's eyes, she lightly shook her head as if to warn me to keep silent. She then looked down at her hand, which was tenderly stroking my mother's. Understanding the meaning, I nodded before folding my fingers into my mother's and wrapping my arm around her back. Together, the three of us sat like that for a long while. No words were spoken between us. Even when the kids woke and the sounds of their crying filled the space around us, my mother remained dazed. I considered leaving her side to tend to my niece and nephew, but decided against it. My mother's devotion to her children had been absolute, and now, in her time of need, I was determined to give it back. Suddenly, the sweet sound of music wafted through the air. I swallowed the lump in my throat as I imagined my husband sitting quietly at the piano, gently pressing down on the keys in a desperate attempt to soothe not only his own sorrow, but that of those around him. My mother turned her head toward the sound, blinking a few times in rapid succession before focusing her gaze back on me. I could see the fog clearing. Jake's music seemed to awaken her. "Casey, you're here," she said, squeezing my hand. "I am, Mama. I'm here." The lines in her face deepened as she cupped my cheeks in her shaking hands. It was then that we both succumbed to the sadness.
Chapter 12. Bereavement. Miles and Darcy were laid to rest 5 days after the fiery crash that took their lives. According to witnesses at the scene, the young woman who hit their car head-on had been texting when she ran a red light. 3 lives gone. Just like that. Most of the last few days, I'd wandered around aimlessly, offering support where needed, and just being there for Casey as she and her family grieved. I was unaccustomed to being the supporter, as my whole life had always been about people rallying around me. I'd never really considered the toll my tragedy had taken on those around me until the tables were turned, and it was I who stood by helplessly, struggling to ease another's pain. My family had turned out in force for the funeral. In the over 2.5 years Casey and I had been together, a bond had formed, especially between our mothers. Last year had been my mother's time of need, while I lay near death in the hospital, and it had been Linda who'd been there to offer her support. And now my mother was sadly returning the favor. Whatever bond they'd formed over the years was serving its purpose today, as Linda seemed to draw strength from my mother, who certainly knew a thing or two about grief. My eyes settled on Casey. She was showing the enormous strain of the past few days, and I struggled to comfort her in her time of need. At this point, I was taking my cues from my wife and allowing her the time she needed to cope with the overwhelming situation. Her main concern now was her niece and nephew, and Casey had channeled her grief into supporting them. As I watched her now, Riley was curled up in her arms. Only 7 years old, his hourly cries for his mother tore at all our hearts. In contrast, his sister, Sydney, remained silent and stoic beside Luke. Although she'd shed a few tears during the service, Sydney was clearly holding back. Her body stood rigid, a slow, simmering fury bubbling just below the surface. I wondered when we could expect the explosion I was sure would come. I recognized that look of utter devastation on her face. I could feel it in my bones. Her heaviness weighed me down in a way I hadn't experienced in years. I'd gladly have borne the pain she was now carrying, as my shoulders were used to the burden, but Sydney,
She was so small and fragile, a girl mere weeks away from celebrating her 10th birthday. Forced to confront death and all its unsatisfying consequences. Luke, focused on a conversation with his cousin, didn't see Sydney slip away and exit through the back door of the church. Through the window, I followed her path to the large fish pond on the edge of the grounds. She appeared so tiny as she sat on her knees by the water's edge. Not wanting her to be alone, I walked down the trail toward her. Sydney blocked the sun with her hand as she turned to acknowledge me. "What are you up to?" I asked, kneeling down to her level.
"Finding rocks."
There was a pile of them sitting beside her. I nodded, picking up one of my own and turning it in my hand. "Do you collect them?" She didn't answer right away, and I stayed silent. Finally, Sydney tilted her head to the side and said,
"No, I'm going to throw them at the fish. See if I can knock them out."
I was a bit startled by her nonchalant admission. What was it with the Caldwells and their fish hate? "Why are you going to do that?" Sydney looked back down at her rocks.
"I just want to."
"Okay, that was disturbing. What did the fish ever do to you?" She thought about that for a minute.
"Nothing."
"So is it nice to take your anger out on them?"
"Probably not," she said, shrugging. "But nobody's nice to me, so I'm not going to be nice to anyone else, and I'm going to start with the fish."
"Ah, I see. You plan on starting with something small and defenseless and then working your way up."
"Exactly."
Sydney peered up at me, the tiniest of smiles transforming her strained face.
"I guess I could hit you with the rocks instead if you want."
Her precocious comment caught me off guard, and I couldn't help but laugh. With her humor and quick wit, I'd always thought of Sydney as a mini Casey. It was almost like watching her grow up gave me insight into what my wife had been like at the same age. "How about this? We spare the fish, and my head, and use that shed back there." Sydney gave what I said some thought before asking,
"Can I break the window on the side?"
"No," I laughed. "Not the window. Jeez, kid, work with me here."
"Fine, but if we get busted, I'm making you take the fall."
Sydney and I gathered as many rocks as we could carry and went around the side of the church to the old shed. All the guests were heading into the large reception room across the parking lot, and Casey caught my eye as we passed by, glancing apprehensively between the two of us, clearly seeking reassurance that her niece was all right. I nodded in reply. Yes, she was okay. A little malicious at the moment, but okay. So, as the others gathered for refreshments, Sydney and I spent the next 10 minutes unloading on the shed. The hollow thwack of the rusting metal was strangely satisfying. Neither one of us held back, and we pelted the wall with ferocity. She seemed to gather strength with each punishing blow, and when our ration of rocks was depleted, Sydney improvised. With tears streaming down her cheeks, she continued the assault by kicking and beating the shed with every last bit of strength she had left. Whatever turmoil she was suffering in her head and heart needed this noisy release. I wasn't concerned by the damage she was causing, because it would only be temporary. I'd already decided the corroded hazard had to go. By the end of the week, a nice, shiny new shed would take its place. Sydney's exhaustion stamped out her fury, and she slid to the ground, her back against the siding. She rested her head on her bended knees, the energy it took to cry zapping her of all earlier bravado. I skimmed down the shed myself and settled in beside her. Together we sat silently for a long while. I understood the benefit of quiet reflection. Not every situation required words. Eventually, she stood up and solemnly walked back to the reception room. I followed a few steps behind. Re-entering the room, I sought out Casey, and when I found her in a tearful embrace with her mother, I decided to let them be. Filling a small plate with food, I took a seat next to Luke, who was staring out the window. "Hey, you okay?" I asked. It was a stupid question, as his swollen, puffy eyes and crimson face indicated he was anything but.
"Yeah, I don't know how I am. I saw you out there with Sid,
Thanks for watching her. I didn't even realize she'd left. She's angry. I know. She's been taking it out on Riley